Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is the award-winning writer Susan Quinn. Quinn is a graduate of Oberlin College and began her writing career as a newspaper reporter on a suburban daily outside Cleveland. She has written many articles for the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, and Ms. Magazine. She is the author of Marie Curie, A Life, which was a Los Angeles Times Book Prize finalist. And her newest book is the groundbreaking Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. It's about First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt's longtime intimate relationship with Associated Press journalist Lorena Hickok. And it's what we will be discussing today. It was published by Penguin Press in September 2016. I'm talking to Susan Quinn by phone from her home near Boston. Susan Quinn, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure to be here.
Now, there have been so many books and articles and plays about Eleanor Roosevelt and Lorena Hickok. Well, why did you think you needed to write another book at this point in time?
Well, there is an early book that came out in about 1980, which was about Lorena's love for Eleanor and focused on that. And then there have been, since then, other books and plays, as you say. But no one had focused a whole book entirely on the relationship, giving both Eleanor and Lorena Hickok kind of full value in terms of how much they meant to each other. Mm-hmm. In the past, it had tended to be Lorena Hickok, who was this lesbian who was in love with Eleanor, as opposed to Eleanor and Hick, as everyone called her, having a genuine love relationship for those intense years that they were, I believe, in love. So that was the story I wanted to tell.
Yeah, and I understand that, too, because I've read many books about Eleanor Roosevelt, and it was always they'd shove it off saying it was a crush. You know.
Yeah.
So that
nothing important.
Sense. Exactly. Yeah. So Eleanor Roosevelt actually had real reservations about becoming First Lady because she had had a really independent life to that point, which is also an amazing point. To tell us a little bit about Eleanor right before she met Lorena.
Well, she had, as you say, developed this independent life for herself. She had starting with World War One, but then especially in 1918, when she discovered that Franklin was having an affair with her secretary, that the marriage changed, and they agreed to stay together, but to go their separate ways, and they really did. And Eleanor increasingly found these really powerful political women who became her close friends and her mentors, and she started to write, she started to give speeches, she started teaching, which she loved, in a school that she helped establish, and she and this couple, this lesbian couple, Nan and Marion, built this cottage, Valkill, and developed a little industry there, a furniture industry to employ local people. So she had lots going on in her life, and in New York. And the idea of coming back to Washington, which was the actual scene of the Lucy Mercer affair, and was an unhappy place for her. So going back to Washington was something she didn't want to do. And then she also didn't want to just be a ceremonial first lady and spend her time being Mrs. R, as she said.
God, that sounds so contemporary, Susan. You know, it sounds like what's happening right now. It's amazing.
It really does, except I think the difference is that she had a very full life of her own.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's not so clear that Melania does.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, it's a very different kind of woman. But yes, the same issues certainly for Michelle, who did have a full life and was a lawyer and a person in her own right, and to have to come and be the wife of the president, it wasn't appealing to Eleanor at all, and she was really depressed.
Oh, I can understand that. So anyway, Lorena Hickok was working for AP, Associated Press, as a reporter, and they assigned her to Eleanor Roosevelt when she became First Lady. To tell us about that meeting.
Well, Hick hadn't actually wanted to cover Eleanor. She wanted to cover Franklin. She was very much somebody who clawed her way up, one of the very few women, as sort of top reporters. And she didn't want to write about first ladies and be on the women's page. She wanted to be taken seriously. So she was kind of reluctant about covering Eleanor in the beginning. But then she spent some time with her and pretty quickly realized that Eleanor Roosevelt wasn't your ordinary first lady, that she was, she's a person, as she wrote to her bosses at AP. And so she became fascinated with Eleanor, and Eleanor was reluctant about talking to Hick because she was raised to believe that a lady did not talk to journalists, but Hick followed her around and slowly won her trust. And I think the two of them discovered that they actually had a lot, even though very different childhoods, both of them had very sad, difficult childhoods, which they shared. And the more they shared, the closer they became. And by the time FDR was elected, they had fallen in love.
And that's the point. That's the controversial point that most people would not even touch, you know, in the past years. Now tell us about Eleanor. Was from a powerful political family, of course, and she was introduced as a debutante. She came from an upper class family, and Hick was from this poor, rural South Dakota world, with an abusive family, and it's such a strange coming together of these two women.
It really is. Eleanor was, of course, Teddy Roosevelt's niece. She was from that branch of the Roosevelt family, but had this very sad, lonely childhood. Her mother let her know early on that she was never going to be a belle because she wasn't pretty. Mm-hmm. And her father, whom she adored, died of alcoholism when she was 10. So she was raised by a grandmother who was very Victorian and strict and not particularly warm, and not warm at all, in fact, mm-hmm. and then servants and a governess, a French governess who she hated, who was kind of sadistic. So she was very lonely, unhappy child growing up in a great big mansion on the Hudson River. And then there was Lorena Hickok, who grew up in this rural South Dakota in these little dusty little towns along the railroad where her father tried to get work. And he was... He was a sadist, I think. He beat her, mm-hmm. and she actually was kicked out by his stepmother, stepwife, or whatever, when she was 13 years old, and she went to work as a maid in other people's houses. Barely graduated from high school. So such a different childhood. But that when they shared these things with each other, they found they had a lot of sympathy. And Eleanor. Hick was very in awe of Eleanor and admired her in a way that her mother never had. And Eleanor always had tremendous sympathy for people who'd struggled and kind of people who had kind of rough edges. You know, Hick was a tough newspaper woman who smoked and drank and swore and mm-hmm. very, very, very different from Eleanor. But Eleanor was attracted to that, to her spontaneity and all the things that Eleanor wasn't, Hick was.
Yeah, this is a total remarkable story. I hope people go out and read this book. But you know what really amazed me, and I had not noted this. Lorena eventually gave up her career as a journalist and moved into the White House, which to me was astonishing.
Yeah, and lived in the White House. It is astonishing. I mean, the Roosevelt White House was astonishing in general because there were all kinds of people moving in and out, you know, and FDR's right-hand man, Harry Hopkins, lived there for a number of years, and his wife, Harry Hopkins' wife, moved in. He got married, and the wife moved in, you know, and there were other people coming and going, and Hick had this room. It was next to Eleanor's office. It was a little servant's room, she stayed whenever she was in Washington, which she was a fair amount. That was her place, and she stayed there off and on for the entire 13 years that FDR was in the White House.
God, it's such an amazing thing. Now tell us about they wrote over 3,000 letters to each other through all these years of friendship. Mm-hmm. But the letters didn't really surface until the late 70s, right? Lorena donated them to the FDR library with the stipulation that it couldn't be opened until 10 years after she died, right? So tell us about these letters and what you discovered in them and why you're so certain that they were lovers.
Yes, the letters, Eleanor had given Hick her side of the correspondence, so we have both sides of the correspondence, which is wonderful and rare. So you really do see what went on between them. And the letters are just full of, in the years of their love affair, which I think are about 5 or 6 years, right, starting with FDR became president, and in the years that followed, the letters are full of longing, of saying, I can't be with you, but I'm going to, you know, but I'll kiss your photograph instead. I'll kiss the little corner of your mouth, your right corner of your mouth, you know, very specific kinds of things like that. Eleanor writing that she had to share a bed with another woman, but she'd wished it were Hick. Eleanor saying, you know, do I have to behave myself when I see you, you know, or can I, you know, hug you in public in front of other people? There's certain little details of your face and on your hair that I long for. The kind of things that lovers say to each other, and concern for each other. Eleanor's concern for Hick when she has various car accident and illnesses and so on. So it's very convincing. And then there are other things. One is that Hick is a lesbian. I mean, she had had a long-term love affair before she met Eleanor, and she is no one was open about it, but it's pretty clear, and to her friends, that she loves women. And then Eleanor is surrounded by these lesbian couples, including the ones she did Val Kill with, and another couple who were her kind of political mentors. And many of these women who were active early in the Democratic Party and in Democratic politics were in lifetime relationships with other women. So it wasn't so extraordinary that she might have this relationship with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So for all of those reasons, I'm quite convinced. I don't know how wildly physical they were, you know, and mm-hmm. that's something we'll never know. But because Eleanor was pretty inhibited physically, as her children attest. But that it was a love affair, I have no doubt.
Yeah, and some of the letters that you quoted, it convinced me too. I mean, you don't write letters like that to your girlfriend from high school,
right.
You know, darling,
no.
Dearest, and you know all these
right.
words. So why do you think? Do you think it was just the times that biographers never really copped to this, and until you actually did in this book? And I know Pat Bond wrote a play, and you know,
yes,
there was
Pat
stuff.
Pat Bond wrote a play,
yeah.
and then Blanche Weeson Cook's 3-volume biography that makes no bones about it. She's very clear that she believes it was a love affair. You know, some in the family were uncomfortable with this, understandably.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, I think it was an idea that we've had about Eleanor Roosevelt and her being this dignified lady, you know, with her little hat and her portfolio and her sensible shoes, you know, and sort of an idea of her of not being actually somebody who could be physical, mm-hmm. you know, I think when I was writing the book, I came up against this in myself, my kind of reluctance to actually let Eleanor be Eleanor, you know. And no one called her Eleanor, for instance, during her life. They called her Mrs. R. Even Hick called her Mrs. R when she was around other people, or she called her darling, you know. And she wanted people to call her Eleanor, but somehow no one could, you know, because she had this kind of enormous dignity and a little bit of a shell around her too, you know. So you kind of didn't penetrate that. But in order to tell the story as I thought it should be told, I thought I needed to see her as, you know, a woman who could be in love and who was in love. So it took me a while to get there, but I came to believe that that it was a love affair and it was okay. In fact, it was more than okay. It was interesting and we should celebrate it because Hick really helped Eleanor a lot during those years. And Eleanor was, of course, the love of Hick's life. Hick never loved anyone the way she loved Eleanor. And she always said that even though she had to give up her job at AP because of the relationship and because it was got really complicated for her to be a reporter when she was so intimate with Eleanor. So she gave up her job, but she always said that she had no regrets ever, ever about that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is writer Susan Quinn. We're talking about her groundbreaking book, Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. Now this is really fascinating that you had to convince yourself that this
yeah.
Eleanor was a really feeling person.
Yeah.
You know, the pictures of her, she does seem very stiff and almost mannish because she was 6 feet tall and, you know, formal looking. It's
I
have a hard time picturing her as a passionate lover too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, passionate, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think Hick probably was the one who kind of led the way, certainly. in the relationship, if what the physical part of it. I think it's interesting, just for instance, that when I my first draft of the book, I was calling Lorena Hickok Hick, because that's what everyone called her, and I was calling Eleanor E.R., which has been the kind of modern shorthand for Eleanor Roosevelt, to call her E.R., like F.D.R. There's F.D.R. and there's E.R. And my agent, when she read the first draft, said, "Why are you calling her E.R.? It seems so cold. Why don't you call her Eleanor?" And I realized that that was a big breakthrough for me, because no one called her Eleanor, you know, when she was alive. But I realized in order to tell the story, I needed to call her Eleanor so that she and Hick could be equal partners in this, and there could be, a, you know, a sense that they were two women in love and not some icon.
That's really an interesting point. Wow. Now let's talk about the fact that Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt were instrumental in what eventually became Roosevelt's signature initiative, the New Deal, because Hick was reporting from poor areas. Eleanor was lobbying for New Deal programs. To talk to us about how they influenced his administration.
Yeah. When you asked about the letters, that's the other remarkable thing about the letters, besides these expressions of an affection, is that there are these long descriptions, particularly from Hick, who was a wonderful writer, of what she was experiencing and seeing on the ground. And she was going to places like, for instance, West Virginia coal mining towns, where people didn't have enough warm clothes for winter, where they were drinking polluted water and living in just horrible shacks and terrible conditions. And that that was one of her first visits, and she wrote Eleanor about it. Her job was to write these reports for FDR's number two man, Harry Hopkins, who was head of the WPA. So she was writing these reports for Harry Hopkins, but then she'd also send another version to Eleanor. So that time, Eleanor came down to West Virginia just to see conditions for herself, and really out of that, Eleanor hatched this idea of building new communities for people in these desperate situations, and out of that grew the New Deal program of building whole communities, and the first of them was called Arthurdale, and it was in West Virginia. And then after that, hundreds more of these communities were built all around the country, and that grew out directly of that West Virginia experience. And then Hick would she was traveling all over, and at one point she was in North and South Dakota, where she'd grown up, and describing conditions in very, very brutal cold weather, where people actually didn't have enough clothes. It's just hard for us to imagine now that people can actually be so poor that there aren't enough clothes to keep them warm. But that was the situation there, and there were not enough bedding, not enough blankets. And Hick was writing back these desperate reports. And that particular instance got direct results, because that was the kind of thing that, you know, you could act on pretty quickly. You could get some warm clothes and some bedding to people. Mm-hmm. So there were those kind of things. And then the more sort of larger thing was Hick reporting on situations where the bureaucracy was getting in the way of getting help to people. And Hick was very good. Indignation was her strong suit. She was very good at it. And she would write back these outraged reports about people who were working on the FDR highway and weren't getting paid, so they didn't have anything in their lunch boxes. You know, so her reports were always very vivid. And the result was that they got results. So she was a really important influence, and FDR often got to see her. Eleanor would pass on these reports to him and make sure he saw them. And he would, when he was working with his advisors, he would often tell an anecdote about something that happened out in the field, and they would always be you know, astounded. Where did that come from? And a lot of the time, it came from Hick's reports.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it, that she had such influence? Now, you know what? You don't bring this up, but do you think, or did any biographer ever think that FDR knew what was happening between his wife and Lorena?
Definitely. I mean, he knew about, for instance, when they built the Valkill, which is this little cottage in Hyde Park away from the big mansion where he grew up, and it was supposed to be this cottage for Eleanor and her friends, and he helped with designing it. And when it was finished and they had a celebration, he gave a gift and dedicated it to the Love Nest.
Wow.
You know, and he and his friends made jokes about Eleanor and her she-males, as they sometimes call them. So he knew about these relationships, and all he cared about was whether that there was public scandal, you know, and I don't think it bothered him so much. I mean, I think he was actually pretty tolerant of a lot of aberrations. And when a man in the State Department was exposed as a homosexual and lost his job, FDR was very indignant about that and tried to prevent it. So, you know, on a personal level, I think he was pretty broad-minded. And also, he had his own things going on, you know. I mean, he had various flirtations and affairs.
You know, that astounds me, too, since he was in a wheelchair and was pretty disabled, that he was able to carry on all these love affairs and stuff.
Yeah, it is astounding. And I actually, at one point, I talked to a physician who wrote about the health of the presidents, and asked him about FDR and whether he would have been able to perform the sexual act, and he said actually that he probably would, that the polio wouldn't have affected that particular system. So.
Mm. Well, okay, well, so somebody was having fun with old FDR.
Yeah. Who knows how much, but he definitely was a big flirt, and he liked to have women around him who adored him.
Oh, and he's an interesting person, too, you know. I mean, he was a great conversationalist. He gave great speeches.
Oh, he was a big charmer, you know, and he was a great leader also, you know. So, but he and Eleanor's relationship was fraught, I would say, complicated. She was there nudging him a lot, and she was his conscience in a really good way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was often annoyed with her, but he also paid attention to her.
Yeah. Now, Eleanor Roosevelt wrote a memoir, was published in 1949, called This I Remember. How does she handle her relationship with Hick in that memoir? I have not read it.
Well, that was a painful, actually, incident for Hick, because she barely mentioned her. In general, in her memoirs, you know, Hick gets very short shrift for good, you know, for obvious reasons, because she didn't want to arouse any suspicion about this being more than just another friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, I think it's in that memoir that she says that Lorena Hickok was the first person to interview her after she became First Lady, and in her first draft she had said, and I learned after that not to play favorites, and that felt so cruel to Hick, because it suggested that she wasn't a good reporter, or that somehow Eleanor had favored her, not for the right reason. So Hick was very indignant, and then Eleanor rewrote that section and made it much more about how everyone respected Lorena Hickok, and she was a top reporter, and that was the reason that she was the first to interview me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in general, that's about as good as it gets. Later, I think she did mention Hick and how courageous she was in battling her illness after she, you know, later in life when she had diabetes and was going blind and all that.
But Lorena Hickok wrote a memoir, too, that was never published. Does it survive? Did you get a chance to look at it?
Yes, and it's quite wonderful, actually. One of the things I think about is possibly trying to publish it. It's not complete. It's just some chapters, but they're very vivid. And I think one of the reasons it didn't get published is because she had the same agent as Eleanor, and Eleanor was writing was tremendously successful. You know, she sold hundreds of thousands of copies of all those memoirs.
Yeah.
And so a memoir by this kind of tough reporter who had a different view of Eleanor and of the world, it was I don't think this was the agent wanted Hick's work to be published. I think it would have been counterproductive for Eleanor. So,
did Lorena mention her relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt in no uncertain terms?
Yes,
or was it veiled like everything else?
Well, no, it was actually, she toward the end of her life, she wrote this charming book that was published, and it was called Reluctant First Lady. And in it, she includes anecdotes, which I use quite a bit of, about their trips together in the summer and some various things. It's veiled so that it's acceptable. You know, there's nothing scandalous or surprising about it. But she manages to capture the warmth, I think certainly more than Eleanor does, of the relationship. And it's quite a delightful book.
But I hope it gets published. It should.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, gosh, it seems like now is the time. Now, I know you say you read almost all their letters. Did you find any surprises in that? Did you find any surprises in any of your research while you were writing this book?
A lot of little surprises. For instance, I was surprised at how angry Eleanor was with Franklin a lot of the time. And it's also kind of surprising that Hick, who never married, never had children, became the person that Eleanor confided in more than anyone else, and confided her despair at times. You know, I mean, she would write things like, "I'm in my verge of tears condition," and then she'd say, "But I don't think anyone can notice." You know, but there was actually a point where she was so angry with Franklin that she talked about leaving him, and Hick wrote this letter to her lecturing her about how, for all his faults, you know, he was a really important person for the world and she couldn't do that, you know. But the kind of the intensity of her anger with him at times surprised me, and I'm trying to think of, there were many things, but that was one of the important ones.
Yeah. Well, we're almost out of time. Can you give us some contact information? And before you do that, what are you working on now? This was such a fascinating book, and it was so well written. And I can we expect something else from you in the future along these lines?
Well, I hope so, Tish. Right now I'm working on just talking about this book, and I'm about to go out to a book festival in Tucson, and you know, other things like that. So kind of waiting for the next idea to come along, but it'll have to be a good one, because this was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, so I can see that. It's a wonderful book, and you really paid attention to detail, and were very careful with it, I think. So give us some contact information.
Okay, so my website is SusanQuinnBooks.com. And that tells about this book and all my previous biographies, all of them, almost all of them, about strong women. That's it.
Well, Susan Quinn, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fascinating. And do go out and read Susan Quinn's book. It's called Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to whatever you come up with next.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.